People photograph for different reasons. I photograph because, in part, because I'm extroverted. To get a good photograph and to make a beautiful portrait, it's a contract that you enter into with your subject. And for it to be successful, that person has to trust you. So as the photographer, it's your job to establish trust with that person.
Absolutely.
As quickly as possible. And there are lots of methods for doing that. And it's important to kind of have different tools in your tool belt depending upon what reaction you want to elicit from someone. Like, I can make you act any kind of way.
Well, I feel that in my soul.
But you'll only do it because you want to.
Right.
Yeah. And I will never ask, and I tell folks this when I'm shooting them, I will never ask you to do something I'm not willing to do myself. Mm-hmm. That's a good question. Living in Barcelona changed the game for me because I was photographing every day.
Okay.
And I was approaching strangers. Mm. I did not speak Spanish when I moved to Barcelona. I did not speak Catalan, which is really what you need to speak if you're living in Catalonia.
Mm-hmm.
But the first thing I learned how to say was, ¿Puedo tomar tu foto, por favor?
Whoa.
Right, like, can I take your picture, please?
Oh, yeah.
Manners matter.
Absolutely.
No matter where you are. And consent matters no matter where you are. And it was a really good practice to be 20 years old in a place where I didn't speak the language, but desperately wanted to communicate with people and be reduced to nonverbal communication.
Yeah.
Right? So if we're looking at how you establish trust with a subject, what if you can't talk? What then? I had 6 months of that practice. And so being able to kind of hone that skill over that period of time and then bring it back was really valuable. And when you're traveling and living someplace new, everything is fresh and new and you see everything with new eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great way to learn how to see.
Yes.
And ultimately, that's what photography is.
Right, right. Okay, so Barcelona pretty much prepared you.
You know, and personal style aside, she really is not only talking the talk on issues, but she is walking the walk.
Okay.
And so I styled her and we had a shoot and we started off shooting in my house and she walked in and said, hey, are there any men here? And I said, no. She said, great. She immediately took her hijab off.
Mm-hmm.
And we went in my bedroom and we had hired a hair and makeup person excuse me. She's wearing a headscarf. So we hired a makeup person and she got all fabulous and we trotted around like girlfriends wearing bathrobe and put looks together and spread them all out on my bed. You know, I deliberate, and a lot of times for these things I'll rent a studio and do it up that way. But for this, I really want it to be as personal and as intimate as possible. And the best way I knew how to do that was to invite her into my own personal space.
Okay, cool.
So we started at my house and then I had location scouted in advance, and that was a very challenging shoot toward the end because it was during Ramadan.
Wow.
And
okay.
Ramadan was at a time where the days were so long.
Yeah.
Like on the day of the shoot, sundown wasn't until like 8:35. And like, bless her heart, Nora really like pulled through, and we had snacks on hand for all of us to nosh on as soon as the sun went down, because
right.
She obviously was you know, going without food all day. But she pulled it out.
Okay.
And the pictures that they ended up running were the pictures that we took right before she got to eat.
Okay.
So she served it.
She's like, okay, we gotta get this done.
I'm
ready to eat.
Yeah, exactly. And we pulled some stuff from my closet and we put these looks together, and it was really fun. And then the feature came out and it went viral.
Okay.
Because obviously there is something you know, really, especially in the hijabi community and in the Muslim community, there was something really challenging for folks about an outspoken, independent, unmarried woman posing for a magazine that is traditionally seen as porn to large communities.
A lot of people who haven't even picked up one of the magazines to
right.
just know, like, they've got some great editorial,
right.
like great articles in there.
Oh my god. I mean, the writing in Playboy it has been well known for decades.
Absolutely.
For a reason.
Absolutely.
But as any good fourth wave feminist knows, part of being a feminist is owning your voice and owning your space and your ability to make these decisions for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So from her perspective, as a feminist, you want to post for Playboy, it is completely feminist and within your right to choose to do that.
Mm-hmm. talk a little bit about the Impolite Company.
So Impolite Company is a series that I've been working on for 4 years because I have been covering society. For a period of time, I was covering society for the Washington Post. So it was, in fact, my job to go to balls and galas and to make pictures. And the pictures that I made for the newspaper were not always the the most interesting pictures in general, because there's a lot of politicking that comes with covering something like this, right? Like, if you want to continue to have access and have people not hate you, you present things in a way that is not unflattering. You know, that's a, and that's just like good manners, I think, probably. Like, don't make somebody look like an asshole in the newspaper. You know, and it's not that I'm lying or it's not that I'm spinning, right? It's still journalism. But at the end of the day, like, it's journalism about a party. And I found it to be interesting because it's fascinating to see how politics manifests in a situation like that. Who's sitting at what table, how the tables are positioned, who is donated to the private auction, who's bidding at the private auction, all these things, right? It's all politics. And
everything in DC is political.
Right. But what I was finding is, you know, I would have to, I would go out on assignment and I would make the pictures for the newspaper, but I was also making these pictures for myself because everybody was really turned up. I would never go for the beginning of the party. Nothing good happens at the beginning of a party.
Not at all.
After the drinks come.
After, right. I mean, after two or three drinks, things get a lot more interesting. So PR folks would be like, okay, well, like, media check-ins at 5. I'm like, great, I'll be there at 10:30. And so I would roll up and people would be really turned up. And people will do anything you ask if you ask the right way. And I would never dress like the help, because if you dress like the help, people will treat you like the help. So I would come to these galas in gowns. And
you come dressed like the actual guest.
I would come dressed like a guest.
Not in business casual, you know, hey, I'm just a photographer.
Right, or like a little black suit. No. Like, if I'm gonna be wearing pants, it's because I'm wearing a lady tuxedo and it's very chic.
Yes.
Right? Yes. Or I'm in a gown.
Right.
And so I covered these parties, and crazy stuff would happen, and I would photograph it, or I would make crazy things happen, and make these pictures in Impolite Company. And all of it is, I set out to show just how power hungry people are. You're right. The city really wants to improve the situation, but the fact of the matter is, you need money to do that, and you need a pipeline of talent, and the good talent in DC leaves because you don't have the resources to be able to live, to be able to really work at a high level professional grade situation, right? So, for instance, there's one modeling agency here. I have to scout my own talent because they don't have what I need. So, versus if I lived in New York or LA, there are a ton of modeling agencies, and I can call a casting agent and be and ask for absolutely the most obscure or specific thing ever, and be like, I would like a 5'9" Asian woman with blue hair and sleeve tattoos who has her septum pierced. Like, they would call me in 2 hours and have that person. If I want to find that person here, I have to go and find them.
You have to go out and hit the streets.
I have to hit the streets and like pound the pavement.
Right.
Or like already know those people. So when I meet cool looking stylish people, particularly women, I befriend them. I'm like, hey, everybody, like, keep the squad close, right? You know, because it's resources are slim. So I really hate how limited the DC creative economy is. That said, I have really enjoyed the challenge of creating my own opportunities here.
Yes.
It's a smaller pond. I'm a 28-year-old photographer, and I've been fortunate enough to have opportunities that I would not have had access to had I lived in a larger market. Because they'd be like, well, get in line. Right, because competition's thicker. And so here, you can, if you're willing to really put in the work and you can deliver, you have access to a lot more opportunities. Yeah. So I've just tried my best to create those opportunities and then to leverage the hell out of them. We spent the first 2 years of our friendship co-working out of her apartment, and she lived in in a space that our mutual friend had put together called Slut Cult. Mm-hmm. That was an all-female live-work artist space. Okay. And it still exists. And female artists still live there. And I would go there because I didn't have an office to go to, and we were both flexibly employed. So we would co-work together, and we spent 2 years just like showing each other cool shit we liked on the internet. Mm-hmm. And talking about making stuff, but we didn't make anything. We just showed each other stuff. And in retrospect, what we were doing was really aligning our tastes and growing together, which was really exciting. When I was first starting out, I was making work for me, and then people hired me to do what I do for them. So as long as you're still making work for yourself and continuing to present your own personal voice, you will get hired to make the kind of work you want to make. But you can't pander, you know, especially in a place like DC where the bar is already kind of low. I'm constantly trying to ask, like, what kind of work do I want to see? Not just coming out of Washington, D.C., but in general, yeah. Right? Like, look at it
from the big world.
Oh, very early on. Yeah, when I first became self-employed, I took a meeting with somebody from D.C. Music Download, actually. Mm-hmm. And I was pitching him on a story. He was like, you can do bigger than that. Look over the mountain. And the idea of looking over the mountain stuck with me, and that's something that I remind myself of often. When I have ideas, I'm like, okay, like, is this idea too small potatoes? Is there a way I can do this bigger?
Yeah.
And challenging myself to do that is certainly part of why the work has continued to evolve and why I've continued to get bigger clients, for
absolutely,
sure.
Absolutely on that.
I follow a lot of like teenagers on Instagram because I'm really curious. Well, because you look at, and this is a conversation.
Like youth culture.
Yeah, youth happened. Culture. Like that is where trends come from.
Yeah.
It's like 15-year-olds on Snapchat and shit. And I want to know what they're interested in. I want to know what they're wearing, and I want to know what their values are. And like that to me is much more interesting than, you know, than what some like mouth breathing person with 300 followers on Instagram is doing, who's my age, you know, because like, who cares what your dog had for dinner? I want to know what a 15-year-old's experience is like in 2017, because I'm just old enough to like have had a much different experience,
yes,
as a 15-year-old, right?
Yeah.
So for instance, like kids now are super into analog shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're all post-internet. It's great. It's super great. So if that's the trend on the come up, I want to know that and start thinking about how I can engage with that.
That's very interesting.
Because I get a lot of inspiration from that.
Well, I guess too, just like even just looking at this, even from like a fashion standpoint, like how like 90s fashion, and I guess even we're going to end up going into early 2000s fashion, mm-hmm. like how that's so popular amongst, you know, teenagers and young people.
And they're all post-gender.
Yeah.
Well, not all of them, but like a lot of them are post-gender, and they're wearing like everybody's wearing like a white t-shirt and regular jeans and Keds, mm-hmm. right? This like very, very basic kind of personal uniform.
Oh, I see. I'm seeing a lot of young guys wearing like the crop tops and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And like, yeah, it's definitely very different, you know, from, you know, when you were 15, when I was 15, you know, even 21, you know, like, very, very different, and I'm not mad at it. I'm really not.
That's great.
I'm not mad at it just because I know what I was doing that was, like, that adults didn't understand when I was, you know, 15, and even, like I said, a few years later, 21, you know what I mean? So I'm not mad at it.
And, well, and the new generation on the come up are so much more woke. They are so much more aware, and because of the internet, are so much more exposed to people whose perspectives are just completely different than their own.
Yes.
And as a result, they're that much more empathetic toward those groups of people.